Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Yevomos Daf Chof Dalid. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Our shiur begins today 10 lines from the top at the Mishnah Mitzvah Begodol Liabim V'im Kidem Hakotan Zocha. The primary way to fulfill Mitzvah Yibum is through the Godol. Godol with the eldest of the surviving brothers. If a younger brother jumped the gun, pushed his way in, so to speak, and married the widow, so then he fulfills the mitzvah. This will be established through a posuk that the Gemara will feature now in the Brisa. On the side of the Gemara, we should point out the nosei, the topic heading reads, Mitzvah Begodol Liabim. And we add, V'lav Dafka Bechor Mamish. The posuk itself makes reference to a bechor. Bechor is a firstborn. But we're adding that the term bechor is not literal, to be taken literally with regard to who is the one to do the mitzvah yibum. It's not necessarily the firstborn. The afal pi, the krok siv bechor, bog se roshof of the okar posuk ipshuto legamri. That even though the posuk uses the term bechor, a gezeirah shava, a word comparison method of exposition of psukim, comes and undoes the simple meaning of the pasuk. The Gemara, Tanu Rabbanan, v'hoyo habachor. Now, this is taken from the pasuk in Dvarim, Chofei, Perek Chofei, Pasuk Vav, and we've included this on the side of the Gemara, where it reads, v'hoya b'chor asher tele yokum al shem ochiv hameis v'lo yimochesh shmoy miYisrael. So the pasuk says, v'hoya b'chor mikan shem mitzvah begodol, the Gemara says, liabim. It's the mitzvah upon the eldest of the surviving brothers to do the yibum. The Rashi explains a little further, mikan shem mitzvah begodol hochi dorish. Thusly, the pasuk is expanded. V'lokha Loi liisha. This is the end of pasuk hey, the preceding pasuk, v'ivma, and you keep reading into this pasuk v'hoya habachor, and we learn from that hamiyabim yabachor. Since the end of pasuk hey made reference to v'ivma and yibum is done, it is done through the bachor. That's the simple read, or the simple reading, or the drasha. Again, I say simple because the word Bechor is not really limited to firstborn. Let's continue in the Gemara. The Pasuk says, Asher Teleid. Those are the next words of Pasuk Vav. Prat la'ayilinis she'ein yoledis. This comes to exclude a situation where the widow of the deceased brother is an ayilinis. This is a woman who is incapable of procreation. The pasuk once again said, "Asher teled," dealing with birth, giving birth to children, that would exclude an eiliness. The pasuk says, "Yokum al shem ochiv linachla." The pasuk, it says that the brother who marries the widow will assume the name of his brother, and that means he will inherit the deceased brother. Ata oimer lenachla oy eno elo l'shem Yosef koren oisa Yosef Yochanan koren oisa Yochanan. You say that it means that the one who does the mitzvah yibum will inherit the estate of the deceased brother. Maybe it is to be taken literally that if the deceased brother's name was Yosef, so the child that is born from this yibum marriage will be called Yosef, or if the deceased name was Yochanan, so the deceased the child of the Yavam marriage will be called Yochanan. So the Gemara answers, Nemar kan yokum al shem ochiv, and Nemar la'alon al shem achem yikru b'nachlosam. So you have two psukim. Here you see the word shem ochiv, and you see the other pasuk that says al shem achehem. And that pasuk is clearly a reference to nachla, inheritance. Ma shem ha'amur la'alon nachla, just like the term shem, which means literally name, but it's in the context of inheritance. Af shem omur kan, so too the term shem used here in the context of ibum is lenachla. V'lo yimocheh shemoi, what does that mean? Prat lesoris sheshmo mochui. This is to the exclusion of a soros, this is a man. If the surviving brother is a male, that is a soros that's incapable of procreation. So the term mochui means that his name is erased. In other words, he's incapable of continuing the name of the deceased because of his incapacity of bearing, of impregnating a woman. So in the course of this brisa, we learned a few halachas. One is that the eldest surviving brother is the one expected to do the Yibum. Yibum is not applicable when the widow is an Eilinus or the brother is a Soros. And the Pulsuk made reference to Yokum Al Shem Ochiv. That means that the brother that does the Yibum will inherit the deceased brother. Now, if Yibum is not done, rather, chalitza is done to release the widow from being bound to the family, then the brother's estate is divided equally amongst the heirs. The heirs meaning his brothers or others in the line of inheritance. Obviously, he doesn't have children, otherwise there would be no Yibum. Omar Rava, Afagav de Becholatur Kula Ein Mikra Yoitzi Midei Pshuto, even though throughout the Torah the simple meaning of the pasuk is not to be disregarded. In other words, in darshaning, in explaining psukim, we take note of the simple reading as well in understanding the Torah. So even though that is true throughout the Torah, hacha, here in the case of Shem Ochiv, Gezera Asoi, Gezera Shava, the word comparison that we referenced before, you have a little arrow to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara. You can align this with the arrow above. The Gezera Shava that we saw there came along, Afikte Mipashte Legamre. Afikte means literally, it took it out. It removed it, the pasuk, from the simple meaning all together. The simple meaning calling someone by the name of the deceased, and that has absolutely no bearing when it comes to the mitzvah of Yibum. And rather, as we saw before, it means that the Yavam will inherit. The Gemara asks, V'ilav Gezera Shava, and if not for the word comparison, Have Amina shame mamish, would I really have thought that shame, the word shame, meaning name, is literally that he will be called by the name of the deceased? Grammatically, that doesn't make sense. In other words, grammatically, when you read this pasuk, it's hard to understand how it could mean literal name. Laman Komizar Rachmona. The Torah, who is it warning? Who is it telling you to? Who is the Torah addressing when it says call the child by the name of the deceased? Now we're working with the pasuk at hand, namely pasuk Dvarim Perik Chof Hei pasuk Vav. So who is being warned? So we have a double underline to highlight different possibilities. La Yavam is he the one who is being addressed by the Pasuk? If that's the case, then grammatically it should have said, Yokum al shem ochicha mi boyalei. The Torah is turning to the Yavam, saying that the child born shall be called by your brother's name. So it's a second person, Yochicha, your brother. That's not what it says in the Pasuk, though. E lebe dina, if the Torah is addressing the court, that the court should make sure that the child is named after the uncle, then the Pasuk should have read, Yokum al shem achi aviv miboyalei. That the court is to make sure that the child born from the Yibum marriage is called by the name of achi aviv, the brother of his father. The father is the Yavam. The brother is the uncle who died leaving no children. But it doesn't say that in the Pasuk. Therefore, it would seem there's no Hava Amina. So that the Gezerah Shava is not as Rava claimed, that the Gezerah Shava is coming and undoing the Hava Amina. There wasn't any Hava Amina. There wasn't any alternative pshat to begin with. The Gemara responds that there was a Hava Amina, and hence justifying the Gezerah Shava, as Rava said, justifying Rava's comment that the Gezerah Shava comes and undoes what I would have thought otherwise. So the Gemara explains, V'dilma hachi ka'amar lehu rachmana lebeisdin. Maybe the Torah really is addressing the beisdin, the court, and it's saying to the court thusly, Imru le layavam, you the court, tell the Yavam, Yokum al shem achiv. Make sure that the child born to you is called by your brother's name. And those are the words in the Pasuk, Yokum al shem achiv. So that we can preserve the simple meaning of the Pasuk with this Hava Amina, with this initial thought in mind. Elo asoi gzeirah shava fikdei legamri. But rather, as Rava said, the gzeirah shava came along and undoes that original thought. The Gemara continues. Hashto de'amris kro begodol ksiv. Maybe now that we're saying that the pasuk is addressing the godol, and now we have a series, you can see quite a few diamonds, and on the side we explain Sidra Shel Hatzois. These diamonds represent a series of suggestions. Dematorosum Lishmor Al Pirush Hamila Bechor Kipshuto. An attempt to keep the word Bechor in its simple meaning firstborn. And each time the Gemara will reject the suggestion. The Gemara continues. Now that we're saying that the Pasuk intends for the eldest son to marry, Emo Bechor Liabem, Poshut Lo Liabem. Maybe the Pasuk is saying that if there's a firstborn, so he does Yibum. If there's no firstborn, so there is no Mitzvah Yibum. Poshut means a non-firstborn. The Gemara says that cannot be the meaning of the Torah, namely that a poshut, a non-firstborn, would never do Yibum. Once again, that cannot be im kain, because if that were so that only a firstborn does Yibum, eshes achiv shelo haya b'ilamai Demi'et Rachmona Momali. Why does the Torah have to go out of its way to tell me that a brother who never coexisted with the deceased is exempt from Yibum? In order for me to appreciate that exemption, it must be that ordinarily any of the brothers, as long as they coexisted with the deceased, would do Yibum, meaning even if it's not a Bechor. And that this special case is exempt. The brother who did not coexist, who was born after the demise of the deceased brother. Just to repeat that point again, if the mitzvah of Yibum was limited to the firstborn, then there would be no need to exclude a brother who was born after the death of the deceased. He wouldn't have had a chance of doing Yibum even if he did coexist, once he's not the Bechor. So we see from this that since we exclude that case of a brother that didn't coexist with the deceased, any other brother that did coexist with the deceased would be eligible for mitzvah Yibum. Porich Rav Acho V'Emo Limute Buchro De'Emo. Maybe the concept of Yibum is in fact limited to a firstborn. And if you then ask, why then does the Torah have to exclude a case of a brother that's born after the death of the original fellow? There is a scenario that is excluded, and that's a case of a firstborn to the mother. In order to appreciate this, we have a little diagram on the side of the Gemara, this, where the star appears. You notice there was Yankiv, and he had two wives. We call them, one is Leah, the other is Rachel. Yankiv had a son, Reuven, and he died leaving no children. That is, Reuven died leaving no children. So now, Reuven's wife would be in the position to do Yibum. Yankiv married another lady, and they produced a child, Yosef. That Yosef is a firstborn to his mother. You'll note that Yosef is born after the death of Reuven. You can see through the numbering, Reuven first died, that's number one, and then Yosef was born, that's number two. So that the Torah, in fact, might very well limit mitzvah Yibum to a firstborn, and as far as Eshes Ochiv Shelo Hayo Balamo, the brother will not marry the wife of a deceased brother that he did not coexist with, is to the exclusion of this kind of situation, where you have a firstborn, but he's a firstborn. He's not eligible for Mitzvah Yibum because Yosef and Reuven are not brothers from the same. Let me correct that point. The Yosef's lack of eligibility is only because he did not coexist with Reuven. So at this point, it could very well be that the mitzvah of Yibum is limited to a firstborn. The Gemara responds, "Hahu lo motzis amris," to suggest that there was a havamina, that a firstborn to a mother would have been the yavam, if not for the fact that he did not coexist with the deceased. This is not a havamina. This is not something I would have thought, because the yibum benachlo tolo rachmon benachlo mino av velo mino aim. The whole mitzvah of yibum is intertwined with inheritance, and the laws of inheritance are patriarchal. Are father based, and have nothing to do with motherhood. So that to have thought that the firstborn of a woman, even though it's not the firstborn to the husband, that thought that the firstborn to the woman would have been the Yavam, if not for the fact that he didn't coexist, again, that's an untenable Havamina. That's not something you would have thought, because this the concept of Yibum is limited to the realm of inheritance. And inheritance, as we said before, is patriarchal in nature. The Gemara asks, V'eimo ki ika b'chor tiskayim mitzvas Yibum. When there is a firstborn, so then the mitzvah of Yibum applies. Now, it'll apply to either the Bechor or a Pashut. But kileka Bechor lo tiskaye mitzvah Yibum. If there is no firstborn, so there is total exemption from Yibum for all the other brothers. So once again, you can see that this is an attempt to preserve the word Bechor as meaning literal firstborn. The Gemara responds, Omar Kro Umeis Echod Mehen. When the Pasuk describes Mrs. Yibum, it says, and one of the brothers died, leaving no children. Milo Askinon Demis Bechor. Does it not include the case where the Bechor is the one that died? The Omar Achmono Liabem Koton. And the Torah is saying that the younger brother should do Yibum. So there's no Bechor, and the Torah is still insisting on Yibum, so that you can see that the word Bechor is not to be taken literally. Question. V'eimo demis koton. Maybe the Pasuk is speaking about this circumstance, that the younger brother died, V'yomer Rachmona li'abein b'chor, and the Torah is saying that the firstborn should do Yibum. The Gemara responds, Ha mi'et Rachmona. The Torah has already excluded the case of Eshes, Ochiv shelo hoya bo'ilamo, a case where there is a widow left, and the surviving brother is a brother that did not coexist with the Bechor. So, you see, or that did not coexist with the deceased. So that you see from here that the Torah is describing a case where the elder brother died, not like the suggestion where the younger brother died. V'eimo, maybe as follows. Kileka b'chor, kidam koton zocha. If there is no firstborn, then if a younger brother goes ahead of an older brother and does Yibum, so it's effective. The ika b'chor, but if there is a b'chor, kidam koton lo zocha. If the younger brother goes ahead and does Yibum, it's ineffective. Omar Kro, ki yeshvu achim yachtov. That's the pasuk that deals with Yibum. And in this pasuk we see huksha yeshivas achim ze loze, that all the brothers are compared one to the other, and they are all considered equal with regard to Yibum. Question. V'eimo ki'iko b'chor lahadra godol. Maybe when there is a firstborn, so then we seek out the eldest brother to do the Yibum. Ki'leko b'chor ein chozrim eitzel godol. If there's no firstborn, so that we don't start seeking out the eldest brother. Aloma toni abayik shisha. So why then does Abaye Kshisha have the following source? Mitzvah begodol liabeim. The first choice is for the eldest surviving brother to do Yibum. Lo rotza, hochim, eitzel, ochiv hakotan. If the eldest one doesn't want to do it, then we go to a brother that is younger. Lo rotza, chozrin, eitzel, godol. If he doesn't want to do it, then we go back to the elder. So that we see from here, even if there is no b'chor, we nevertheless seek out the eldest brother. Let's go over this last point for clarity purposes. The suggestion was that only if there is a firstborn would we seek out an older brother, a godol. If there's no b'chor, so the idea of seeking out an older brother would be of no relevance. Yet, Abaye Kshisha teaches a source in which it says that the mitzvah is begodol. If he doesn't want to, then we seek out a brother that is younger, but yet he, in turn, has younger siblings. This is explained in Rashi, three lines from the bottom. Holchin eitzel ochiv hakoton, mashma koton heimenu. He's younger than the eldest. The godol mishar echov. But he, in turn, is older than other brothers. Almo mahadrinan agodol. The godol koidem. We see from this procedure that we seek out the older brother. Even though we're not seeking out the bechor. From this source, the Gemara feels that we see the concept of seeking out an older brother in isolation from the issue of the presence of a bechor. So the question then is, what is the role of bechor in the pasuk? So the Gemara answers, kibechor. The process of choosing the yavam has an element like bechor. Ma bechor bechorosu gormolo, just like in the case of a firstborn with regard to his relevant halachas, af godol gedulasoi gormolo. So too, when it comes to seeking out the eldest of the brothers, and here we want to emphasize, even if there is no actual bechor present, it is his position in the line of brothers that causes him to be sought out. The Gemara asks, V'eimo ki miyabe b'chor lishkol nachlo. When a b'chor does the Yibum, so then he will take the inheritance of the deceased brother. However, if the Yibum is done by a brother other than the firstborn, lo lishkol nachlo. So there is no taking of the property, the inheritance left by the deceased brother. So just to go over this again, maybe the only time that the deceased brother's estate is inherited exclusively by one of the brothers, that's only in the event that the Bechor does the Yibum. However, if a non-Bechor does the Yibum, so then there isn't any exclusive inheriting of the estate of the demise. The Gemara answers, Omar kro yokum al shem ochiv v'harei kom. The idea of the Yavam inheriting is simply based on he who does the act of Yibum. And even if it's not the Bechor, he has nevertheless he nevertheless has assumed the position of his brother, kum, meaning he stood in the position of his brother by marrying the deceased's widow. The Ela Bechor, the Kaya Rachmono, the Gemara finally asks, well, if all of that which we've said till this point is true, whereby we show that the mitzvah of Yibum is not dependent on the firstborn, but rather it speaks about the choosing of an older brother as first choice, but not necessarily the firstborn. Why then does the Torah use the term Bechor? Lemai, we continue at the top of Amud Beis, Lemai Hilchasa. What's the point of using the word Bechor if the laws of Yibum and the laws of inheriting the deceased estate are not dependent on presence of firstborn? The Gemara answers, Legriusa. The use of the term Bechor is here for diminishing purposes, and we'll explain what that means. Ma Bechor eino notel beroi kibemuchsok, just like in the case of standard inheritance, where a father dies, leaving a couple of sons, the firstborn gets a double portion. So that if a man, let us say, died leaving $90, the Bechor would get $60 and the other brother $30. The laws of Bechor inheritance, sometimes referred to as primogeniture, apply only to monies that were in the possession of the father at the time of his demise. Outstanding funds, outstanding debts that the father had not collected at the point of his death and subsequently are paid up, those are divided equally amongst the brothers, including the Bechor. So we say as follows, just like the Bechor, eino notel beroi kibemusa, he doesn't get a double portion in roi. Roi means outstanding funds that have not been realized by the father, in the same way that he does get a double portion in muhsak, in funds that the father was in possession of at the time of his demise. Af hai, so too with regard to the yavam and his inheriting his deceased brother, einoi noitel beroi kibemusak. He inherits the deceased brother, but only those funds or those properties that were in the actual possession of the brother that died. Other funds or holdings that were not yet in his possession, those eventually, when they are paid up, those will be divided equally amongst all of the brothers. The Mishnah. You'll notice that we have a double underline in the Mishnah, and this is explained on the side under our Nosei Mivne heading. Shnei Mikrim, two cases, Shonim, different cases, Shel Hashad, where there is suspicion of acts of immorality, de amrinon lechatchilo lo yusein. In both cases, we say that the woman in question shall not be married by the person. Aval im kines, however, if he did marry these women, yesh hevdel b'nem, you will see a difference in halacha between the cases. Now, that introduction is a bit vague, but it sets the stage. The Mishnah. Hamnitan al hashivcha v'nishtachro, oi al hoi v'des kecho v'nis gairo. A person who is suspect of having conducted intimacy with either a bond woman, a bondmaid, or a Gentile woman. In the case of the bondmaid, so at the time of this suspicion, she was in fact enslaved, or with regard to the Gentile woman, at the time of the suspicion, she was as yet not Jewish. However, in the course of time, the bondmaid was freed, making her a full-fledged Jewess, and the Avedis Kechavim, the Gentile woman, converted. So we say that this man, Hareze lo yichnos, this man shouldn't marry them in their new Jewish state, in their new state of Judaism, because by marrying them, that will only strengthen the original suspicion, the original rumors. By marrying them, it will only bring people to say, oh, you see that he had really been with them in their forbidden state, either as a slave woman or as a Gentile. V'imkines ein motzien miyado. However, if the man does marry them after they converted, we don't tell them to separate. Now, in contrast, hanitan al eshes ish, a man who was suspect of having conducted intimacy with a married woman, married to someone else, Votsiua mitachas yodoi, and Beisdin insisted on her leaving her husband, as the halacha demands. A married woman who willingly conducts intimacy, or as we say in common parlance, she had an affair with another man, so she is to leave her husband. Apopi shekine siotzi, even if the paramour married her, he must divorce her, he must leave her. And the reason for that is that they are forbidden to be with one another. The Rashi quotes the Drosha from the Parsha of Soita, where the word v'nitma'a appears two times, and that word tells us that, the repeat of that word tells us that a married woman who conducted an affair with another man is forbidden to her husband and forbidden to the paramour as well. The Gemara now takes an approach, or let's say focuses on the issue of conversion. A very interesting sukya, which is something that, as at least of this recording, happens to be very timely. The nosei, the topic heading on the side, we've written Gerus L'Shem Dover Acher, Shelo L'Shma. Conversion, which is done for some, we'll see, ulterior motive, other than the desire to become a part of the Jewish people for the sake of Judaism. So our Gemara, Ha Giyores Miohavya. The woman described in the Mishnah, we saw in the Mishnah an idol worshiper, a Gentile woman, who then converted. Now, why was she converting? She was converting in order to marry this man, the man concerning whom the rumor had been that they had an affair. So from the Mishnah, one sees that her conversion is a true conversion. In fact, we see in the Mishnah that if the Jewish man is going to marry the convert now, after she's converted, it would be a good marriage, indicating that her conversion is a real conversion. Now, with that in mind, namely that conversion with this ulterior motive is considered a binding conversion, Veromini, we raise the following objection. Echod ish shenizgayer lushum isha ve'echod isha shenizgayer lushum ish, whether it be a man who was a Gentile who converted because he wanted to marry a Jewish woman, or a Jewish or a Gentile woman who converted because she wanted to marry a Jewish man, v'chein mi shenizgayer lushum shulchan molochim lushum avdei shlomo, or someone who converts because they want to benefit from the amenities of power, or because he wants to join the servants of King Solomon, which Rashi says were Bale Srora, they were a powerful people. Einon Geirin, Divrei Rebbe Nechemya. Conversion, all of these are examples of conversion with ulterior motive. Rebbe Nechemya rules, they are not Geirin, they don't become converts. Shohel Rebbe Nechemya Omer, Rabbi Nehemiah was known to say, Echad Gere Aroyos V'Echad Gere Chalomos V'Echad Gere Mordechai V'Esther. Whether a person converts because of the lions. The reference is the Kusi people. Rashi makes this connection, who converted because of their fear of lions. So in order to save themselves from the lion attack, they converted. And you have Geri Chalomos, the individual saw in a dream that he is to convert. So based on his fear or his concern with the dream, so that's why he converts. Geri Mordechai and Esther are people that in the Purim story converted because they saw that the Jews assumed power and rose to the top. They're not considered ger. Einon gerim ad she is gairu, and we skip the brackets momentarily. Ke bizman hazeh. Until one converts for reasons like nowadays, meaning where the Jews are not on top, and there's no reason to convert to Judaism other than an absolute desire to be a Jew. There's a bracketed section that we just skipped. Let's go over it. The Gemara says that there is no Geirus Achi Skaru Bizman Hazeh. Until someone converts nowadays. So, Bizman Hazeh Sakodaitoch. Do you mean to say that only nowadays a conversion is a conversion, but anyone who converted in the past is not a convert? That's ridiculous. Eloimo ke bizmanaze. Rather, the understanding is conversion is not considered a conversion unless one converts under circumstances like nowadays, which is true even in the past when Jews were not on the top. And by becoming Jewish, you don't become a person of power. Then, and only then, will a conversion be binding. So our question then is, our Mishnah seemed to indicate that a conversion with an ulterior motive is binding, and this Tanaic source indicates that it's not. The Gemara continues, Ha itmar alo omar Rav Yitzchak bar Shmuel bar Marto mishmei derav, halocha kedivrei omar kulam geirim heim. There are other opinions on this topic, and the Gemara rules like those other opinions that say that all of them are Gerim. So that our Mishnah reflects an opinion other than that of Rebbe Nehemiah, and that a Gerus with an ulterior motive is a good, or is a binding Gerus. The Gemara asks, Ihochi, if that be the case, L'chadchilo nami. The Mishnah should have indicated that after she converts, then the man can go ahead and marry her. Why did the Mishnah indicate otherwise? It said he should not marry her. If the conversion is fine, why not marry her? The Gemara answers, Mishum d'Rav Asi. There's another consideration. As far as the basic Gerus is concerned, so it's a good Gerus. It's a good binding conversion. However, because of Rav Asi's teaching, we tell the man who was suspect of having conducted an affair with the woman who was formerly a Gentile not to marry her. D'yomar Rav Asi, Hoser mimcho akshus peh, velazus vasayim v'chulei. Person should avoid rumors and evil speech made about him. And by marrying her after she converts, that will only strengthen the original rumors and bring upon yourself a bad name. Tosis has a very interesting he'ora on this. Let's look at it together. Mishum d'Ravasi, Hoser mim chafshus pevchulei. Then again, just to review the Gemara, if a person will marry the woman after she converted, so it will only strengthen the rumors that he had been conducting an affair with her beforehand with a non-Jewish woman, and that's certainly unacceptable. Now, with that in mind, the Tosfos says, Omri, debenitan al hapnuya ein lahachmir milichnois mishum lasis vasayim. If, let us say, a man was rumored to have been conducting an affair with a single Jewish girl. In other words, an unmarried, a single woman. And then, in the course of time, he goes ahead and has a formal marriage to her. We don't categorize that as the problem presented in our Gemara. The Adirabba, mitzvah lekonsa. If anything, it is a mitzvah to marry her. And Tosfos bases this on the parsha in the Torah, de ba'anusa ksiv, regarding a girl that was raped. Very, very, a very unfortunate event. A very evil act, raping a woman. And yet the Torah says, v'lo tialisha. There's an expectation that, of course, if she consents, he must marry her, the rape victim. So that we see cases where acts of immorality were done with a single woman, we don't have an objection to his then subsequently marrying her. This, of course, just to repeat ourselves, is in contrast with the case of where the act of immorality, not just lacking Kiddushin and Nisuin, but in addition to that, there was the problem of her being a Gentile, that already is going too far. And we don't encourage such marriages even after they convert. Tonu Rabbonan, we continue in the Gemara. Ein mekablim gerim limois hamashiach. In the time of ultimate redemption, we will not be accepting converts. Kayotzibo lo kiblu gerim lo bimei David velo bimei Shlomo. Converts were not accepted in the times of King David and King Solomon. Omar Rebelozer, my craw, what is the pasuk that serves as a basis for this approach? The pasuk says, Hein gor yogur efes meoisi, mi gor itoch olayich yipol. Now, if we continue with the Bach, there's an aleph, and we underline this in the Bach edition, mi gor itoch be'an yusach, hu da olayich yipol. He who dwelt amongst the Jews in their poverty, in their affliction, he can join the Jewish people. Aval idach lo. But if someone was amongst the Jews in their glory, and the conversion would be in order to benefit from the glory, that, no. That's what the Gemara means when it says, aval idach lo, but someone who was not with the Jewish people in the time of their anius, in their time of their affliction and oppression, so then we don't accept them. Now, once again, we said at the beginning of this section, this was a very timely topic, and the comment is made in light of the events that are taking place at the time of this particular recording. We do not deign to delve or touch upon what we call halacha lemaisa, common disclaimer that we make in Gemara markings. But you do see in this Gemara, you see two very distinct approaches concerning Gerus conversion with motives other than embracing Judaism for the sake of Judaism. The Gemara continues, Hanitan al Eishes Ish. Then the Mishnah went on to say, Apa pi shekines yotzi, person who is suspect of immorality with a married woman, even after he marries her, so he is to leave her. Before continuing in the Gemara, we glance at the side. We have a nose, a topic heading, Dino Shel Rav. The Gemara will be occupied with Rav's halacha. Ha'atikotoni, de ha'choshen al eishes ish, That which we learned in the Mishnah, that a woman who was a married woman who was suspect of immorality with another man, we have her, she is to leave her first husband, and she after that she was then taken in by the second fellow, Yotzi, the Hainu, Dafka im Hoyu Adim Shizinsab. Now this is Rav's point, that she is to leave the second man only if there were witnesses that can testify concerning her immorality while she was still married, concerning the intimacy that she had while she was still married, intimacy with the paramour. Omar Rav, Uba Eden. So, the Mishnah had said that if the paramour married her after she left the first husband, she's to leave the paramour, the marriage with him. That's only if there were witnesses that can testify concerning immorality that she had with him at the time she was married to the first husband. Triangles now appear in the Gemara. These are Kushos al Rav. You have one here and another one a number of lines later. The question here lasts a number of lines. You can see we have a long question marking. Omar Rav Sheshes. Amino Kinayim Vishokhiv Rav Omar Lahai Shmaitza. I think, says Rav Sheshes, that Rav was dozing off when he said this teaching of witnesses, that in order for us to insist on her leaving the paramour, marriage with the paramour, there would have had to have been witnesses. So now, what is Rav Sheshes' objection to this halacha of Rav? Tisanya hanitan al eshes ish votziua al yado, a woman, a married woman who is suspect of having intimacy with some other man, and as a result, she had to leave her husband. V'nizgarsha mitachas yad acher. And after she left her first husband, she married someone else. Not the paramour. She married someone else. And then was divorced by that outsider. Im kines lo yotzi. If the paramour marries her, so then he does not have to divorce her. Hechi domi. What are the circumstances here? Idiko edim. If there were witnesses concerning the original affair, ki osa acher v'afsike lukola mayhave. Even if there's an interim outsider that becomes her husband, what difference should that make? If there were witnesses concerning the affair with the paramour, that imposes a permanent prohibition between the woman and the paramour, regardless of whether she marries someone else in the interim. Elolav, deleka edim. So the Tanaic source we just saw, we have to say there were no witnesses concerning the original affair. Now, why does the source rule that the paramour eventually does not have to divorce her? V'taymo, the osa acher v'afsike l'kola. Since there was an interim husband that came and stopped the rumors. In other words, at that point, she married some outsider, so there was no more talk of her having had an affair. Ho lav hochi, mafkinon. If, however, there was no interim husband, but rather she left the original husband and then was married by the paramour, under these very circumstances that there were no witnesses, we would nevertheless insist that she leaves the paramour. And that is unlike Rav. Rav said that the only time that she will have to leave the paramour is if there were witnesses concerning the original affair. Here we set up this last Tanaic source, indicating that even without witnesses concerning the affair, she would have to leave the paramour. Omar loch Rav. Rav responds, Hu hadin diafagav de lo also acher v'afseke lokola. The same halacha applies whether or not there's an outsider who marries her in the interim and stops the rumors. There is, again, no difference whether there is an outsider that marries her or not. Iiko edim mafkinon, ileko edim lo mafkinon. If there are witnesses, then she must leave the paramour. If there are no witnesses, she does not leave the paramour. Vehochi ko'omar. And what the source above was trying to say is thusly. The afagav de osa acher the afsike lekola, even though there is an outsider who marries her in the interim and stops the rumors, lechatchilo lo yichnos, in the event that that outsider divorces her, still as a first choice, even though there were no witnesses, as a first choice, the paramour should not marry her. As far as what happens if he does, so then what Rav said will hold true. Namely, if there are no witnesses, we don't separate them. And if there are witnesses concerning the original affair, we do separate them. But the emphasis here is as far as what, as a first choice, ought to be or ought not to be done. Mesveib. Again, we are going to ask on Rav. Rav said that the only time we separate her from her marriage to the paramour is if there were witnesses concerning the original affair. So let's see. We have a source. When is it that we say that if the paramour took her in, he must divorce her? Kishain lo bonim. When there are no sons from the first man, from the first marriage, from the marriage to her first husband. Avo yesh lo bonim lo teitze. If she has children from the first husband, in other words, while she was still married, she bore children, we say she should not leave. Because if she does, if we insist that she does leave, then that will only strengthen the original rumors, and her children from the that she had while she was still married will be suspect of being illegitimate. If we make her leave the paramour, that will show the public that he is a person that really had an affair, and then the children that she bore while she was married to the first person will be suspected of being children that the paramour created, impregnated her. And they would be mamzerim, a married woman bearing children through relations with another man. So that if there are children, if this woman had children while she was married to the first man, and then she subsequently goes ahead and marries the paramour, we will say they should stay together. Continuing in the source, the imbo eide tuma. If witnesses that come to testify about the affair, here we're not talking about just rumors but actual testimony, then even if she has several children, she must leave the paramour. Now, what we see from this source is that if there are no sons and there were no witnesses, we do separate her from the paramour. And that is not like Rav. According to Rav, only witnesses will motivate us to separate her from the paramour. The Gemara continues, Rav Muki Lo Lemasnisen. Rav understands the Mishnah that said Yotzi Beyesh Lo Bonim Veyesh Lo Edim. The case of the Mishnah was that she had children, and because she had children, then you need to have the witnesses. And this, by the way, is what we saw in the Seifa of the Tanaic source that we just learned in the Gemara. Namely, that if there were sons, even if there were sons, but witnesses had come, she must leave. So that's how Rav sets up the Mishnah, that there were children, and because there were children, that's why only if there are witnesses do we separate them. If there are no witnesses, then we have what was taught at the beginning of the Tanaic source, that we don't want to separate them because that would arouse suspicion of her children with the first cousin as actually being mamzerim. The Gemara continues, Umay dochake derav l'ukmi l'masnisin b'yesh lo bonim v'yesh lo edim v'taymo di'iko edim mafkinon v'ileko edim lo mafkinon. What is it that forced Rav into this position to explain that the Mishnah that said Yotzi was because there were witnesses, and only because she had children did we insist on the witnesses? However, if there and if there were no witnesses, we wouldn't have separated them. Lukma, why not set up the Mishnah? B'she ein lo bonim ve'af agav v'leko edim. That even if she doesn't have children from the first husband, even without witnesses, we would separate them. So the issue here is why or what forced Rav into understanding that the Mishnah was speaking about a case that there were witnesses. And it's, as we said, because of the witnesses, even if she had children, we will separate them. But if there were no witnesses, since she had children, we would not separate them. So how does Rav know that the Mishnah is talking about those circumstances, that there were witnesses? Omar Rava Masnisin Chisei. The language of the Mishnah posed a difficulty to Rav that only through this explanation will we make sense of the Mishnah. My Iri Detani Hotsiuha. What caused the Mishnah to speak about a case of the court's involvement? Listening, Hotsia, let the Mishnah speak about the husband divorcing her. Ela kol Hotsiuha, the language of the Mishnah, which says they forced her departure from the husband, the Beis Din. Grammatically, Hotsiuha, as far as Rav is concerned, means they took her out. And that's the they, that pronoun is a reference to the court. Based in Be'edim Hudamafki. The court does not operate unless there were witnesses. The Iboyasema. Another approach is that without sons, without children, we would not without children, we would not have her leave if there are no witnesses. And as far as the sources above that implied we would have her leave even without witnesses, Hani Masnaisa Rebihi. The sources above were according to Rebbe, a woman can be separated, can be removed from her husband with mere rumors. Desanya. And here we have a source in which Rebbe's name appears. Rochel Yoitse. Rochel is a merchant who sells perfumes and possibly jewelry to women. Rashi says, Moichir Besomim. He sells fragrances or perfumes to women. So one of these salesmen is leaving a woman's house. And we're talking about a married woman. So he's leaving her house. Ve'isha chigeres besinner. And the woman is then seen putting on her sinner. Now Rashi explains the sinner two lines from the bottom. Hu ke'ein mifnasensha anoshim chogus letznius. Seems to be some type of undergarment that women would wear for increased modesty. So she is the circumstances are, we'll say, a little bit suspicious. Here, this spice or the perfume salesman is leaving the woman's house, and the husband comes in, seeing her putting on this particular undergarment, this sinner. Omar Rebbe, Hoyel Umachur Hadover Teitse. Since this is literally an ugly situation, it's a suspicious looking situation, he should divorce her. Another case, Roik Lamalo Min Hakila. Rashi says this is a continuation of the opening of this source. A salesman is seen leaving her house, and the husband notices some roke. Roke is often taken to mean some saliva or spit that's on the inside top of their bed canopy. Now, how did this get there, if not for some act of intimacy having taken place? And Rashi says he was lying there with his face up while they were conducting their affair. So the husband sees all of this. He sees the salesman leaving their house. He notices that on the inside of their bed canopy roof, there's this roke there. It's doesn't look good. That's Hoyel Mechura Dover Teitse. We continue at the top of Chof Hamad Aleph. Another suspicious-looking situation. Min olim hafuchim tachas hamita. Rashi at the top has he explains min olim hafuchim pien lamato vade shel nochrihem v'hafchoi kidei shelo yaki horoya. Shoes that are turned upside down. It seems that they were turned deliberately so that they shouldn't be noticed. Omar Rebbe Hoyel Mechura Dover Teitse. He says this is a situation that does not look good, therefore the husband should divorce his wife. The Gemara asks, on this last example, Min Olim Hafuchim, inverted shoes, Lechsi Deman Ninu. Just take a look at whose shoes are they. Are they some other man's or they're the husband's shoes? Ela Mokoim Min Olim Hafuchim. Here Rashi has two pshatim. Let's take a look at the first pshat. Mokum min olam hafuchim nikur mokum hafichosin ba'ofor shetachas hamita. The shoes leave a certain impression in the dirt, in the dust that's under the bed. So it's the original shoes are not there. That, we said before, could have been solved by just seeing whose shoes they were. But shoes that had been turned upside down to help camouflage the event, so that was noticed by the imprint they made in the dirt under the bed. The Gemara continues, V'hilchaso kavose derav, the Hilchos HaKavose, the Rebbe, the halacha follows Rav, that says that we're not machzik a koil, we don't place, let's say, any premium on rumors unless there were actual witnesses. And on the other hand, the Gemara rules like Rebbe, that says by the presence of a mere rumor, that's enough reason to have them, to have the husband divorce her. Well, kashi so these would be two contradictory rulings. Loi kashya, there isn't a contradiction here. Ha bekola de posik, ha bekola de loi posik. Kola de posik is a rumor that stopped. And what does that mean, a rumor that stopped? So Rashi explains that after the first rumor was spread that an affair had taken place, another rumor went out that the first was a lie, that no affair had taken place. The Gemara goes on to explain, Kala Deloi Pasik, a rumor that was not blocked, Veleko Edim, and there are no witnesses, Karebi, then we'll follow Rebbe's approach. The fact that the original rumor was had continued without being challenged, without being refuted, we will follow Rebbe that the husband should divorce her. Kola deposik ve'ika edim. If there was an original rumor, it was then rebuffed. However, there are witnesses that she did commit the act of immorality, then we will follow Rav. In other words, that the fact that there are witnesses, she has to leave her husband. The kola delo posik ad kamon, when we speak about an original rumor that wasn't stopped, how long must the original rumor take place in order for us to reckon with it, to give it some level of credence? Omar Abaye, Omra Li Aim. Abaye says that his foster mother told him, Dumi Damasa Yumopalga. Suspicions in the town, Rashi says, Chashudeir, is becomes a problem if rumors are spread over a day and a half. Velo Amoran, and here we qualify this, that we don't say that the koil, that the rumors are considered significant, ela delo posik beini ubeini, that there was no interruption in the interim. Avo posik beini ubeini, ho posak, if there was a rumor, maybe it lasted a day and a half, but there was an interruption where it was challenged in the middle of that time, even though it picked up afterwards, it's not considered a serious type rumor. The lo amoron ella, the lo posak mach masira. We just said that the hafsaka, the break in the rumor, is considered a break. That's only if it was not out of fear. Let's say the man who was suspected of immorality was also a person that commanded power and could cause fear on the part of the public. Avo posak machmas yirahu. If the rumors were blocked in the interim, because and you were dealing with a man who could cast fear on the public, we would say that the blockage of the rumors were out of fear, not because the rumor itself was weak, and therefore the koil is still intact. Velo amoron el deleko oivim. That which we say that the rumors are considered serious and have to be reckoned with, that's only if you're dealing with people, the suspected couple, that had no enemies. Avol ika oivim, if they had enemies, oivim hu da'afku le lukola. It's the enemies that were promulgating the rumors. And this is something to take into consideration oftentimes when you have public figures, political figures that are the victims of rumors. By the very nature of politics, there are enemies. And therefore, the regard that the halacha, that the Gemara would give to such rumors, as you can see, quite minimal. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.